2 Samuel chapter 9, we're going to start reading in verse 1 here in a moment. We're going to talk about a story of one of the lesser known individuals in the Bible named Mephibosheth. About 6 months ago, we preached a sermon on his life, and we're going to try not to rehash too much of the same material. There's only so much the Bible says about Mephibosheth, but we focused on the seven ways that he is like a Christian, Mephibosheth, and so we'll look at some of that as well today. But 2 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 1, it says, "And David said, is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul that I may show him the kindness for Jonathan's sake?" What is the best day that you've ever had in your life? Maybe your best day involves an amusement park. It kind of depends on how old the person is as far as the answer to that question. A five-year-old that's been to Disneyland will say, "That was the best day ever. I got to go to Disneyland." As you get older, you experience other things that maybe and hopefully will eclipse a day at Disneyland. Because, by the way, a day at Disneyland, whether that's the best day ever or the worst day ever, all depends on who is paying. If I were to take my family, if we had no deals, no breaks, and I took my family for one day and got park hopper passes that we could go to both Disneyland and California Adventure, it would cost us over $2,000 to go one day. So that would be the worst day ever from my perspective. But if you're a child, it's the best day ever. Then as you get older, there are other things that happen. There's a graduation. There's a wedding. If you're married, I hope that your wedding day was a better day than just going to Disneyland for a day. Or if you're saved, maybe the best day of your whole life was the day that you were saved. I want to start this morning by looking at the best day ever in Mephibosheth's life. We're going to have three thoughts as we walk through this chapter. Number one is the best day ever. We start the day where David, once again, is experiencing some downtime. Not that he's down in the mouth, but he's got some spare time on his hands. And we've mentioned this before. What does David do when he has free time? He starts thinking wonderful thoughts. He doesn't think selfish thoughts. He doesn't think, how can my life be even better? What can I do? What can I get in my life that would make it better? When David's all alone, first of all, we looked that he had the thought, we need to bring the Ark of the Covenant back home. God is not where he should be in our nation. It's been too long. We need to bring the Ark of the Covenant back. And then he does that. He brings it back and he puts it in its place and starts thinking again, I live in a wonderful palace. My house is better than God's house. We need to build a house for God that kind of gets him up to speed where he deserves to be. So he's thinking wonderful thoughts about God. And then in today's message, we see that he starts thinking wonderful thoughts about others. Is there anybody left of the house of Saul that I can do him good for Jonathan's sake? He starts thinking about others and how he can be a blessing, how he can help other people. And this, by the way, is the path to joy. Jesus, others, you. We think about Jesus first. How can we honor and worship Jesus? And then we think about others. How can we be a blessing to others? And then we think about ourselves last, and that J-O-Y, that's the way to have joy in your life. You put yourself first and you end up being miserable. So David starts thinking, how can we do something for the house of Saul because of Jonathan? Remember, back in 1 Samuel chapter 20, this is where this all started. David and Jonathan, they struck up a friendship. They had a kindred spirit over believing in God and wanting to serve God and fight the battles of the Lord. 1 Samuel 20, verse 14, it says, and now they're getting older, and they make a covenant with each other. And thou shalt not only, while yet I live, show me the kindness of the Lord that I die not, but also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, every one, from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "Let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies." And Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. This, by the way, here, where David wants to bless someone because of Jonathan, is a beautiful picture of our salvation. When we're saved and given all that we're given from God in salvation, God doesn't bless us because of us. He blesses us because of Jesus. Now, he does love us, but we are not worthy of the least of all his blessings. But Jesus is worthy, and God has made a covenant with Jesus that because of his death on the cross for us, he will honor whoever calls on the name of the Lord, whoever believes on the name of the Lord. They will be saved because of Jesus. We're not saved because of our own merits, the furthest thing from it. But John 14 and verse 6 says, "Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." It's through Jesus and because of Jesus that we are saved, and all of the grace of God is just showered upon us. So David's looking around. Who can I bless? And somebody's got an answer. Back in 2 Samuel 9 and verse 2, it says, "And there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, Art thou Ziba? And he said, Thy servant is he. And the king said, Is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto king, Jonathan hath yet a son, which is lame on his feet." We, by the way, have been introduced to this man already back in 2 Samuel chapter 4. His name is Mephibosheth, and we're told in 2 Samuel 4:4 how he became lame. That was the first thing out of his mouth. Jonathan has a son, and he's lame on his feet. 2 Samuel 4:4 says, "And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame on his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel. And his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass as she made haste to flee that he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth." And so the way that he becomes lame, this happens the day that his father and his grandfather are killed in battle. This would be Mephibosheth's worst day ever. He was only 5 years old. He may not have much of memory of that day. But as it is told to him, and as he knows why he is lame, it all comes rushing back. It all happened on the same day. His father, his grandfather die. And as he is running to escape for his life, he falls and becomes lame. And so Ziba says, yes, there is someone. He's lame. Back in 2 Samuel 9, verse 4, "And the king said unto him, Where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, Behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lodabar. Then King David sent and fetched him out of the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar. Now when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was come unto David, he fell on his face and did reverence. And David said, Mephibosheth. And he answered, Behold thy servant." Now, by the way, Mephibosheth didn't fall on his face because he was lame. I know this is what you're thinking. He just couldn't walk very well. And as he was going to meet the king, he tripped and he fell on his face. He fell on his face because he was humble. He's humbling himself. And he doesn't feel himself worthy of anything. And then maybe he also thinks that today's his day to die. Maybe he's thinking, David has tracked me down. I'm a potential heir to Saul's throne still. Maybe I'm a threat, and maybe he's going to wipe me out. I don't know if he's afraid. David says, fear not. So maybe he is afraid, doesn't know exactly what's going to happen. And by the way, I think David doesn't let the cat out of the bag. I think he wants to see the look on his face, the look of surprise, when he pours blessings on him. Verse 7, "And David said unto him, Fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father, and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually." What an unexpected turn of events for Mephibosheth on this day. Why am I going to the king's house, the king's palace? Is he going to kill me? Not only is he not going to kill me, he's going to bless me. And not just with any blessing. He doesn't just say, "Hey, you know, I'm going to give you $5. He says, "I'm going to restore you all the land, everything that was your grandfather's, the land of the king, wonderful lands." And then on top of that, he's going to be part of the king's family. He says, "You're going to be at my table and eat at my table continually." And then it goes on to say, like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth was not just given a better life. He was given the most wonderful life that you could imagine here. I wonder what that moment was like for Mephibosheth. Can you put yourself there in his shoes? He's taken from a horrible place where he's basically living in exile and hiding, wondering each day, is someone going to find him and kill him? And then all of a sudden, he's going to be in the family of the king. And by the way, this speaks, he gets an inheritance here. And it reminds us, if Mephibosheth is a picture of a believer, it reminds us of the inheritance that we are going to get from our king. And by the way, we don't see our inheritance now. We will see it one day. 1 Peter 1 and verse 3 talks about what we have waiting for us. It's a done deal. We can talk about it past tense because it's so sure. It says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you." You and I, if we're saved, we have an inheritance that's waiting for us. It is reserved for us. It's got our name on it. Nobody else can take it. It says reserved for Daniel or whatever your name is. And nobody's going to take it away. And it's going to last forever. It is incorruptible and undefiled and that fades not away. And if you're saved, I hope that you're looking forward to one day that inheritance. And so Mephibosheth gets it on this day. And here's his response in verse 8. And he bowed himself and said, "What is thy servant that thou shouldest look upon such a dead dog as I am?" Back in the Bible days, they didn't think very highly of dogs. It was a word that you would call someone as an insult. The Jews and the Gentiles, they would call each other dogs. Dogs had not yet been elevated to God status as they have today. Today in India, they worship cows. In America, we worship dogs. They're right at the very top of the totem pole. But they weren't man's best friend back then. They were dirty. They were outside animals. And the Bible says that in the book of Proverbs, a living dog is better than a dead lion. So a lion is obviously better than a dog. But once a lion's dead, now a dog that's at least still alive is better than that lion. A living dog is better than a dead lion. But Mephibosheth says, "I'm like a dead dog." This is like as bad as you can get. A dog is horrible, but a dead dog. And so Mephibosheth here, all of a sudden, goes from being a dead dog to the king's kid. His whole life is transformed, flipped upside down. This was the best day ever. However, this was not only the best day ever, this was also, number two, our second thought, this was also the worst day ever for somebody. This man that we've seen his name a couple times here, this man Ziba, he wasn't as thrilled as Mephibosheth was on this day. Mephibosheth was delighted. He fell down. He says, "Wow, this is awesome." Ziba, a little bit of a different attitude. And we don't see all of it here, but we're going to bear it out a little bit. We go on in 2 Samuel 9 and verse 9. It says, Then the king called to Ziba, Saul's servant, and said unto him, "I have given unto thy master's son all that pertained to Saul and to all his house. Thou, therefore, and thy sons and thy servants shall till the land for him. And thou shalt bring in the fruits, that thy master's son may have food to eat. But Mephibosheth, thy master's son, shall eat bread always at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then said Ziba unto the king, according to all that my lord the king hath commanded his servant, so shall thy servant do. Now, by the way, I don't think he said it quite like that. I think he said it more like this. According to all that my lord the king hath commanded, so shall thy servant do. I think he tried to hide his true feelings, but he was not happy that all of a sudden he was going to be leapfrogged in a moment by Mephibosheth. Let's go on and finish out the verses, and then we'll come back to it. The king goes on and says, as for Mephibosheth, said the king, he shall eat at my table as one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all that dwelt in the house of Ziba were servants unto Mephibosheth. Ziba didn't think this was too great. He was frustrated because who was Ziba? By the way, he starts off as a servant. He's just a servant. Now, he was the servant to a king, to King Saul, and I think he started to grow in his mind and be elevated. And at this point in his life, he's not a servant anymore. He has servants. He's got 15 sons and 20 servants, 35 people, and I think his sons are kind of at his beck and call that they help him and serve him. He's the head honcho in his house. He's got 35 employees, so to speak, or 35 slaves, 15 sons and 20 servants. And I think the Bible mentions that on purpose. He had a lot of people at his disposal. And now David says, all those people at your disposal are now at Mephibosheth's disposal. You're now going to be servants to Mephibosheth. And Ziba goes from being the man in his household to the head servant. Now he's a servant, and everything that now they have to go out and till the land. He hasn't been tilling the land maybe at this point. And now he's back out in the field. Now he's a servant again. And resentment and envy begins to set in. And it turns into bitterness. And he begins, and we don't see it very much here in this story, but one day this bitterness is manifested. We're going to fast forward a few years. And David's son Absalom is going to mutiny against him. He's going to chase him out of the kingdom. And David has to flee for his life. And some people go with him to support him and to help him in the potential battle that's coming. And Ziba capitalizes on this moment. Because what's Mephibosheth? Remember, he's lame. He can't walk. And he leaves him behind. And he goes to David and he lies about him. 2 Samuel 16 and verse 1 says this. And when David was a little past the top of the hill, he's running away for his life, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him. Remember, he used to be the servant of Saul. Now he's the servant of Mephibosheth. He met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins and 100 of summer fruits and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, what meanest thou by these? And Ziba said, these are bribes so that you will bless me. You know, that's what is happening here. And Ziba said, the asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink. And the king said, and where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem, for he said, and this is the lie, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. Then said the king to Ziba, believing the lie, behold, thine are all that pertained unto Mephibosheth. And Ziba said, I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my Lord, O King." Ziba turns into this weasel, this snake, who is, the wheels start to turn, and he plots how he can get back some things and take back what Mephibosheth has stolen from him in his mind. He's now relegated to servant status, and he says, I want to do something to fix this. So he lies, he slanders Mephibosheth. This was furthest, and we're going to see this in just a moment, this was furthest thing from Mephibosheth's mind, thinking, oh, David's the king, but the kingdom should be in the house of Saul, and now David's gone, maybe I will be the king now. We're going to bring the kingdom back, which would, if this were the case, this would be a slap in the face to the grace of David that has been shown him. This would be a slap in the face, and instead of the gratitude that he should have, it paints Mephibosheth as someone who's conniving and wanting more and discontent and dissatisfied with what he has. It was actually Ziba that has this mindset. So this was the worst day ever in Ziba's life. Greatest day ever for Mephibosheth. He goes from rags to riches. Ziba gets leapfrogged. He gets left behind. Now, he had been a servant. He doesn't deserve more than this, but he thinks he deserves more than this. And so when it's taken away from him, he gets bitter. We're going to see a direct opposite response from Mephibosheth. And this leads us to our third thought. Number three is the best response ever. We've seen the best day ever and the worst day ever. I want to look at the best response ever. And we don't see it here in 2 Samuel 9, but we see, I believe, the motivation for it. So 2 Samuel 9 and verse 13 says this. So Mephibosheth dwelt in Jerusalem, for he did eat continually at the king's table and was lame on both his feet. Notice, the first thing that was ever said about Mephibosheth by Ziba is he's lame on his feet. And then Mephibosheth is brought out of Lodabar, and he's given stuff, and he's given a place. He's provided for everything. You say he's like one of the king's sons. And the last thing it says about him, he eats at the king's table and he was lame on both his feet. That is still the defining thing about Mephibosheth. He's been given grace. He's been given a place, but he's still lame on his feet. It doesn't say that he came into the king's house and he got this and this. And then also he was healed of his lameness. He wasn't healed. You don't automatically get healed from lameness just because the king blesses you and honors you and brings you into his house and lets you eat at his table. Several years ago, I was at someone's house, and one of the things that I noticed, they had several dogs that would shed. Some of them shed places, and they had a sign at the house that said, "Dog hair, don't care." And that was a neat little rhyme. Like, oh yeah, it kind of makes sense. They're saying, if you bring up that my house is messy because of the dogs, I've given up on it. And to make me feel better, I have this sign that says, "Dog hair, don't care." But I was thinking about that sign, and Mephibosheth, this is now his attitude when he looks at his life. He says, still lame, can't complain. This is what we've entitled our sermon today. Still lame, can't complain. Whenever Mephibosheth would wake up in the morning each day and roll out of bed, he would look down at his feet and he would remember that he's still a cripple. He's been blessed by David. He's been taken out of hiding. He's not going to die anymore. He's been brought to the king's table, but he is still, every single day of his life, he's still reminded, I look down at my feet and I'm still lame. And I believe that the mindset that he has each day is, I am the luckiest man in the world. I'm just a cripple. I'm just a lame person. I don't deserve all that I've been given. And I'm grateful for every single day that I have of life. And I'm grateful for every single day that I'm blessed to be part of the king's family and to sit at his table. And as Christians, we also should have the same mindset. as Mephibosheth is a beautiful picture of salvation, our lameness is still evident in our lives. What's our lameness? It's our flesh. It's our sinful human nature that we still have with us, that we carry with us every day after we're saved. Yes, we're redeemed. Yes, we're justified, but we are still sinners. We're just, as the song says, sinners saved by grace. That's the difference between a believer and an unbeliever. An unbeliever is the sinner. A believer is a sinner that's saved by grace. But we're still sinners. Justification means that we are declared to be righteous even though we're not. We're not transformed into the righteousness of God at that moment. We're not perfect. We're not sinless. We're still sinners, but we're redeemed and we're justified. And our attitude day by day, when you wake up in the morning and you roll out of bed, you put your feet on the ground, look at those feet, so to speak. Look in the mirror and you know who you are still, right? We still know that we all sin every day. We fall short of the glory of God every single day. And use that mentality and apply it to your life. How so? When Mephibosheth is wronged by Ziba, when Ziba slanders him, I think he looks down at his feet and he says, I'm just a lame cripple. I didn't deserve what I had in the first place. So now if it's going to be taken away because of a lie, what can I say? I pinch myself every day anyway. I didn't deserve it. And I don't have a bitter mindset when it's taken away. So many people struggle with being given something and then having it taken away. I remember several years ago, there were tax cuts. And every time a new president takes over, there's a fight over what's going to happen with taxing versus tax cuts. There was a law that had been signed by George Bush that made a one-year lapse in the millionaires, billionaires' death tax. You know, whenever somebody dies, then their estate is very heavily taxed. And the way that George Bush had signed a particular law, there was a one-year break in that. And the left were losing their minds, going crazy over this, because there were a lot of people who died that year and they didn't have to pay millions or billions of dollars to the government. And they were so upset. They said, that's our money. We need that money. And no, that billionaire's money belonged to him and it belongs to his family. But because they had signed taxes into law and they were getting that money, they were so upset when it went away, but it never should have been theirs in the first place. It's like when you give free handouts to someone and then you stop the handouts. You can see this right now. You can see it with unemployment. You can see it with stimulus payments, that if they go away, like, I liked that. I want that back. That was mine. And if you give free money to everyone except one person, that one person's going to feel upset that he didn't get the free money. And that's our human mentality. But as Christians, we should look down at our feet and know, I'm just a lame cripple. I don't deserve anything of what I have. So if it were all to go away, if it were to stop tomorrow, what can I say about that? That is Mephibosheth's mentality. That was his shield when envy and bitterness tried to come for him. His shield was he knew who he was. You see, Ziba forgot who he was. He forgot that he was just a servant. But Mephibosheth, he's still lame. Every day of his life, he remembers, I'm just a cripple. I deserve nothing. And you and I as Christians, what do we deserve? We deserve hell. We deserve to be in hell right now. But we're not. Pinch yourself. Because of the free grace of God. And when you and I have hard days, and people may do things against us, they may criticize us, they may slander us, they may wrong us. How do you handle being wronged? How do you have a response like Mephibosheth? You just go look in the mirror and realize I'm still a sinner that deserves hell, and anything that I have better than hell is more than I deserve, so I'm not going to complain about anything. I'm not going to get bitter at anything that happens to me because I could be in hell. That is Mephibosheth's mindset. Listen to 2 Samuel 19. I want to read Mephibosheth's response. So he comes to David finally, David comes back from Absalom has died. David comes back home, and Mephibosheth goes to meet him. And David says, why didn't you come, Mephibosheth? Why'd you stay behind? And Mephibosheth, by the way, to show that Ziba had lied about him, he doesn't take a shower or shave or change his clothes the entire time. He's got a beard now that's about a foot long so that he can show that he stopped growing. He started growing this beard out of mourning the moment. He wasn't living it up while David was gone. And then 2 Samuel 19, listen to verse 24. We'll read all the way down through verse 30. It says, "And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet nor trimmed his beard nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. And it came to pass when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king that the king said unto him, Wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, My lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass that I may ride thereon and go to the king, because thy servant is lame. But my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. For all of my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet thou didst set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right, therefore, have I yet to cry any more unto the king? And the king said unto him, Why speakest thou any more of thy matters? I have said, Thou and Ziba divide the land. And Mephibosheth said unto the king, Yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king is come again in peace unto his own house." This is one of the most amazing moments in the entire Bible. That Mephibosheth doesn't scratch and claw to hold on to what King David had given him for free. He's willing to let it go because he's happy that the king is back, and he's happy that the king didn't kill him way back when he had the chance. He said, "You elevated me when I didn't deserve it. I have no right to ask for anything from the king. I've already been given more than I deserve. I'm closing my mouth. I'm done. Let Ziba take everything. I'm just happy to be alive, and I'm happy that the king has returned home." What an amazing response. This is not what most people would do. This is not our human nature. This is Holy Spirit of God induced grace. He has a gracious response to the grace that has been shown to him. We also, like Mephibosheth, shouldn't care about the things of this life. He says, "I don't care about that stuff. Let him take it all. I'm just glad to be part of the king's household." And we shouldn't scratch and claw to hold on to all the stuff in this life. What happens if it gets taken away? What did Job say? "The Lord giveth, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Can we respond that way? Because I don't deserve anything anyway. Everything that I have is just a bonus. Ziba was bitter, and he took it out on Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth could have been bitter in return, but instead, he shows an amazing response because he knows who he is. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 7 shows this should be our response when we are wronged. "Now therefore there is utterly a fault among you, because ye go to law one with another. Why do ye not rather take wrong? Why do ye not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded?" Why is it that we get so bent out of shape and upset and bitter when somebody wrongs us? You did that to me. That's wrong. That's not fair. I deserve better. No, we don't. We don't deserve anything. And the best way to have the best response whenever you're wronged by a person or just by what God allows in life. Some people say, "Oh, the universe is against me." No, God allows things. And the best way to respond is just to go look in the mirror and say, "I'm still lame. I don't deserve anything." And we've been given everything in heaven one day. We're waiting for our inheritance. We don't have it yet. This life is not it. This life is not heaven at all. And I hope that we can endure the wrongs of this life by taking the example of a Mephibosheth. And he was redeemed, but he was still lame on his feet. He was brought into the king's house, but he was still a cripple. And you and I, we have been saved by grace, but we're still lame. We still sin. We still don't deserve anything. And as Christians, we should be constantly remembering and reliving that best day ever. Don't focus on that bad. You just had a bad day? Well, go back and remember the best day ever. I didn't deserve that, and I still am benefiting from that day, the day Jesus saved us. Remember what you and I still are, and that should carry us and allow us to handle anything. Let's bow together in prayer.